Welcome to the Best Ever You Show with your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network. The Best Ever You Show is here to help you live your life to the fullest. How? Real people, including celebrities, real advice, real places, products and businesses, real life stories. With this radio show, printed magazine, websites, community, and more. And now, here is your host, Elizabeth.
Good afternoon. I almost said good morning, everybody. Morning, afternoon, whatever it is to everybody. Hello, hello, and thank you so much for listening to the Best Ever You Show. We are a live show on Blog Talk Radio for over 4 years now. We're coming up on 2.5 million downloads, listens, and shares. And so it's all grassroots. There's no PR firm behind anything I do, from, you know, my Hay House book to my Best Ever You website to anything. We're all grassroots. And so we really, when we say really appreciate, it's like bold, italic, emphasized, uppercased, shouted from the rooftops, appreciate you guys listening and sharing and, you know, following all we do, because it truly is totally grassroots and husband funded. So a guest with me today, she's a fellow Hay House author, and her name is Lily Leonardi. And Lily, I wanted to make sure I pronounced your last name right, because I didn't get a chance to ask you before we went live on the air. Did I say that right? I've never talked to you before.
Yes, you did.
Oh, good. Okay. I'm just double checking. We don't want to slay your name before we get started. But
That's
Lily,
all right.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here. Lily, her website, if you're following along and on your computer, is lilyleonardi.com. It's LILLIELEONARDI.com. And we're going to have an angel show today. I'm really excited about this because I'm one of those people who's always been quiet about angels until recently. And I've encountered a few people who actually talk openly and loudly about their encounters with angels and other people's encounters with angels. And so I'm fascinated. And I reached out to this group of Hay House authors expecting nothing in return. I didn't really expect anybody to even really answer me. I figured it would all be old emails or something. And this is a blessing. Lily responded, and her books were just what I needed at the time. And I just want to share her and share her books with you and welcome you to the show, Lily. Thank you so much for being here with us today.
Well, thanks, Elizabeth, for the opportunity to share with you and your audience. I greatly appreciate it. And congratulations on your book, Percolate. I tell you,
I've been
reading through it, and I'm really enjoying the chapter, Laugh Until Coffee Shoots Out of Your Nose. I think the problem in today's world with so many that we forget about the joy, and it brought back a lot of fun-filled memories of with nine siblings and laughter. So thanks for your book came at the right time, too, to help percolate my my mind a bit. So thank you.
Yeah, it's interesting how you meet people for a reason and you never know quite why. And I believe in that. And I believe in that as I've met you. We have so many things in common, too. Like, you've got nine siblings. I've got 11. You know, it's all these things. There were little common things. And like, I keep emailing you going, look, we got that and that and that. Just aside from your books for just a second, you have done something that, you know, I don't know that, okay, this is going to be kind of general and correct me and all those funky things and make it politically perfect and whatever, but, you know, you were in the FBI, I mean, and you're a female, and it just doesn't seem, you know what I mean? It's so cool to me. I don't know how to quite explain it, but when I came, I'm like, oh, that's neat. You know, girls that are police officers and FBI and detectives and all these things, we're really breaking down barriers, aren't we?
I think to some degree, I think we've broken down barriers, and I think it has a lot to do with the women that are raising their sons to be kind and caring and respectful of women. You know, I was raised in a home just like you. I don't know if you were raised Catholic too, but I'm going to guess that you may have been based on the number of siblings. But, you know, my mom had 10 of us and went back to college. I think I was in seventh grade and got dual doctorates and became a professor and worked for 30-some years and still at 83 works. But when you ask her what her success was, she will tell you every time she had the best husband. He encouraged her to go back to school and make herself content with, you know, like she was intelligent. And I remember when he sat us down and said, Mom was going back to school, and that we all kind of, he either put everything into context of the Bible or football, that we, in this time, it was all about being the team. The team had to work together. Now, when I was growing up, I resented it a lot because it was such an extra load in your teenage years. But as I entered into my career post a divorce or in the midst of a divorce, I began to realize more and more how tough it had to, you know, it had to have been. And my dad loved his mom and his sisters, and he did the same thing with his wife. So I think more and more, as we raise, you know, as we raise our sons and daughters, to be mindful that you limit yourself in your own mind. It has nothing to do with gender or any of the other elements that are in one's life. It's if you can visualize it, as my dad always said, you can make it happen. And at 14, I wanted to join the FBI. That was one of my dreams, that and pediatrician. Very much extremes, I guess, and from the other. But I, as you know, in the books, I got pregnant and married at 16, and that kind of quashed things for a while, you know, because I chose my daughter and to be a part of her life and to know her. And it put me behind with dreams for, you know, probably about 12 to 15 years compared to. But I look at my life as having been just like our friendship developed, of having been placed in the right place at the right time. And then the universe took, you know, presented itself with the opportunities.
I love that. Absolutely love that. You know, the one thing, as I was reading your books, which, by the way, if you're listening, she has two books. I think you may even have more than that, but we're going to just talk about these two for this moment. In the Shadow of a Badge, and then the latest one is The White Light of Grace. So if you haven't picked up those books yet, they're amazing. And they're where did you get the courage to be so honest and vulnerable? And I read those books. I'm like, wow, she's so cool. You say it. You know what I mean? You know, because sometimes you're like, I know I was raised like sometimes like, you know, to everybody else, everything's perfect, but they may really not be, you know, kind of thing. And I think in both of our books, we are like, things aren't perfect, folks. And here's why. And you did that. Was that intentional, or did that just come out in your writing, or is that your style? Or,
well, I've been writing since I was 16, and most of it started out as poetry. And the first book that I wrote, and I've never published, it was called Thoughts of a Woman Named Trouble. Maybe someday I would. But my parents, like probably again like yours, we were taught not to talk about too many things. And as a small child, as the second book describes about how I saw angels as a child. But my mom also has a saying that I came out of the womb telling her where to go because I had my own mind. But post 9/11, and when everything, you know, happened, and like a lot of the responders, you know, we ended up with varying degrees of post-traumatic stress. One of the things that the therapist that I went, you know, through the help of the FBI to determine who would be best to help me heal, she told me that journaling would be a very important element to healing. And so the journals actually became the first book. As I journaled, it was segmented, like in little, but it flowed as if the whole story was being told. And so one of my closest friends is my brother, who also happens to be an attorney. And I gave it to Sam to read first. And in reading it, he told me that it was more of a book, that he felt that I was telling the story of 9/11 from my perspective, my interpretation of it, and what had transpired, and then about the angels. And I was most fearful about telling about the angels for two reasons. One, because of my past and how religious I had been raised, I didn't think I was worthy of sharing the message with the world. Second, I was concerned, that everything that related to my job. But having right. gone through the therapy that they call, that's called eye movement desensitization reprocessing, EMDR, and it would take a whole show to explain exactly what that is. But it's not hypnosis, but it kind of puts you in a place where your both sides of the brain open up and release, like, all the information and the details. And during some of the initial sessions, I was going at that point, the early point, maybe twice a week. So in the initial sessions, it talked about all the horror of the events and all the stories that, were told by family members who had lost their loved ones and how much it affected them, and listening to everything, including fellow responders and what you saw and what you did. And because it was an entire community within that crash site that worked together. So there was a lot of information to share that could be shared. And so I think for me, having told that, it took everything inside of me. And once I did, that authentic part of me had no fear anymore, because it was almost like you fulfilled one of the most significant element of your life to tell that story. Now, initially, there was a lot of backlash from it, and that's not important at this. But the significant point I was leading up to was during the EMDR sessions, everything about the angels and then some came through during these sessions. And it was almost like a relief because, in the world I lived in, that word, the biggest word I kept hearing was, it may have been like something delusional because I was so upset, like most of us were that day.
Nobody wants to hear that. You know what I mean? Nobody wants to hear that. And I'm not saying like nobody wants to hear that on the radio right now. I'm saying like from your point of view, that's the last thing you want to hear about yourself when you believe you saw what you saw and you know that you saw what you saw. You don't really want somebody going, well, because you have this, it's you didn't really see it. I don't like that. Do you know what I mean?
Well,
how'd you fight that?
But two things happened. I didn't fight it. I didn't have to. Because my employer assigned or connected me to this psychologist. I didn't choose this psychologist. My employer, because of my status, like you have like top secret clearances, so you can't just knock on anybody's door to talk about your work.
Right.
So through my employer, they assigned basically me to work with her. So I knew her credentials far exceeded she specialized in the treatment of trauma and teaches at the Omega Institute and teaches at clinical, big institutional clinics and different things on it. So she audiotapes everything, even to this day, if I have to go, I go for Reiki sometimes or acupuncture, I go get a reboot, to be mindful too. And so all the information, and having been an investigator, all the information fell into place. So from that point on, it didn't matter to me who said what to me. As far as I was concerned, the facts were the facts were the facts. And if you needed them, they were there. And so from that point on, I think it helps when you're older too. Like I'm 60, so it's important that what you leave behind, you know, it's not important who believes me. It's important that I deliver the message, and how it's intended to be received is received. It's not in my control. So it's important to talk about, you know, the angels. It's important to talk about, you know, my perception of how I perceive God. And like I tell people when I begin my lectures or on book travels and that, my perception of God and yours doesn't have to be the same thing. It's about the sharing of the messages and the openness to talk and the relatability. Your journey and my journey are different, but there's relatability in it that the allows for you to become your authentic self. And I think that's most important.
That
you,
I love
as
that.
You say, the best
I love
you.
That.
It's about authenticity. And you're preaching it every day using different wording, but it's the relatable meaning of becoming the best you before, you know, your human experience leaves the earth.
I really like the way you just said that. And I like the fact that I'm going to listen to that over and over again. I think it's going to be a clip that replays for me a lot because it's a really good reminder. And I think it's also a really good reminder that if you're scared to do something, and even if you're not 60 or 47, you know, maybe you're 20 and listening,
mm-hmm.
you know, go for
yeah.
it at a younger age, you know, and stick to your whatever, you know, stick to your self-confidence and so forth. And, all that you just said to be your best and be your authentic self, because I've got four boys and we teach a lot of that in this house. It's interesting you just said that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll play that for them too. Cool.
And I agree.
No,
with
I really
you.
Like
it doesn't
that.
Doesn't matter the age.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter the age, and you're 100. But I think as we become more open to spirit, and we, like you're teaching your four sunset. I talk to my four grandchildren about the importance of being open, of not hiding, you know, in those beliefs, much like what we're seeing today in the world. More and more young people are becoming engaged in expressing their thoughts, whether it's spiritual, political, an everyday form. Their understanding, you know, but my parents did raise me to believe, they were both educators, so to believe that one voice can change the world. And think about whether it was in past in history, the change, or present day, one voice can lead to change, can change the world in different ways. And so I firmly believe that we all need to give voice, to be heard, to deliver the messages and be open about our connectivity to the divine. And for me, maybe I was raised to believe that there were angels. And on that day, on probably the worst day I hope I'll ever see in our history, I called out to them and asked for help, and they weren't there just for me, so I don't want to place it in that. But mm-hmm. the vision that manifested was there, was present to bring help and comfort and healing in a time of great tragedy.
To anyone listening, do you want to describe a little bit more about your role on that day and where you were and where you saw the Legion of Angels and give more details around that in case anybody hasn't read the book who's listening?
As you said, my employer was, you know, the FBI, and after all the crash incidents, myself and two other gentlemen were deployed up to the crash site to take up mobile command. And I'm sure people understand what that it's what mobile command is, and it was the stage because just like each of the you know the towers had extreme and the Pentagon, and that everybody had like issues. Ours had to do with it being a rural area. So on the way out there, you do like what you've trained to do is prepare as best you can in your mind. And the gentleman that was driving Mobile Command and I never even said a word to each other for like an hour and a half. And when we got there, we got out of the Mobile Command and we watched firefighters leaving because a part of there's a little forest surrounding like the landfill portion of the site. And the forest had caught fire, and they had come to, of course, put it out. And when I saw them, their faces, I started off as a patrol officer and was around firefighters and EMS and a lot, and their faces looked very bewildered. And so we walked up onto a bluff. If you look at the present-day site, it's where the 40 trees are planted, and it overlooks the rock that marks the actual crash site, where the plane actually crashed. And we stood up there, and all you could see was just bits and pieces, remnants of what was once part of the plane and humanity, just like scattered in every direction. And I felt a sense of almost like three people standing there in one. The law enforcement professional who was going to have to, you know, report back on what you had witnessed. And because of my, I was community affairs, that would mean like ancillary services, like immediate ancillary services. And then the mom who just wanted to stand there crying and thinking about all the moms that wouldn't be able to say goodbye to their children, because you know what I'm talking about with four kids.
Oh yeah.
You know, everything that relates to them, you know, you want to be a part of. And then the spiritual human being that was calling out like to God to help me gather enough courage. And you know, when I talk about me too, I don't want to make it look like I'm thinking I did anything more special than anybody else. There were about 1,200 responders that worked in various, from, you know, security to investigation to the community and helping the surviving family members to service organizations like the Salvation Army and the Red Cross. And it was one of the only times in my 25-year plus career that I ever saw everybody work so wonderfully together. Everybody was serving in the best interest of the fallen heroes and their families and trying to do everything we could to bring comfort to them. So when I talk about myself, I'm only like one of, like I said in the book, like a beehive that did her part while everybody else did theirs, you know. So I don't want it to make it sound like I was any different than anyone else, because everyone worked and nobody cared what their job description was at that point. They did what they could in tandem. And so as we stood there, there were a couple of guys to the left, and if I remember right, that they also worked for the Bureau. And there were several to the right of us that I was later told they were either FAA or NTSB, and I don't to this day recall who it was. And one or two of them was in semi-protective gear. And so as we stood there, there were these ponds of water that still exist there that I saw like this light, like these twinkling lights coming up off the water. And initially I thought it might have been fish, that something had maybe landed in the pond, or the jet fuel had gone into the pond and now the fish had died and they were on the surface, and their scales were kind of like bouncing back. They looked like twinkling lights. And so when I stood there, you know, as I said, I wanted to cry, and you had two guys, one on each side, and then guys to the left and guys to the right. And I thought to myself, you know, you learned a long time ago in my first days of policing, you don't cry in front of the guys. So I just prayed and asked, you know, to be able to have the strength. And so as I'm praying, I see this light get stronger, and my eyes kept going in the direction of this light. And all of a sudden, it turned like a white mist, and it opened up, and I saw what I call a legion of angels. And after I describe a little bit, if you want me to, I'll read like a paragraph, because out of the book that better describes. But so, of course, my initial reaction was, oh, I'm going to lose my mind. I'm losing my mind. And so I started praying even more and kept saying, God, if that's you. Now, I knew they were archangels, because anybody that raised the way we were and you go to Catholic school, you know what the archangel looks like. And they were tall. The bluff is a good maybe 8, 9, 10 feet off the ground. And they were almost as tall, and the way their wings arced, I knew they were archangels. There were so many of them. They were stanced in like military style. I saw what I believed to be female and male facial features. I saw brown and like blonde golden hairs and every variation that you can imagine. And then facial features and skin color of, I believe, every culture that you could, you know, imagine. And when I talk to people in my book chats, I say I kind of liken it to the fact that there was an estimate of 93 cultures were affected in the Twin Towers. And so for me, the angels reflected that.
93.
Those, every culture, yeah. Is that, to me, that's kind of makes sense to me when I recall the vision. And so they were dressed in what I say Roman centurion garb. And one was out front, and I knew it to be Archangel Michael because of the childhood incidents that happened. And he was the only one that apparently had a saber, and it was angled down. So again, in my quiet mind, I'm freaking out thinking, I'm imagining. So I'm asking God for help. If it's you, show me a sign. And I always laugh when I talk about it, because there's a sign in front of you and you're asking for another sign. Your human experience is not able to grasp it. And so at that particular moment, the guys from the right told us to clear the field. The fire was smoldering again, and we were standing there, and every day I was in, if I remember right, a black skirt, a white shirt, black hose, and black heels, and you were standing on like hazardous material, right. You know. And so we moved to the right, and I asked God again, if that's you, give me a sign. I looked, the angels were they still present. And so we moved to the right, and all of a sudden there was a suitcase lying on the ground, and it was sprawled open, and the contents had spewed out. But everything was there intact except a little bit of, like, singe on some of the clothing. And so one of the guys made a comment about the suitcase made it, where's the bodies? And so we walked a little bit further, and I looked back again, and the angels were still there, and I asked for the third time, if this is you, God, please give me a sign. So we walked up on, there was a Bible laying on the ground. Now, you have to understand, this was a rural area, and when we first arrived, there wasn't even a bird chirping. You didn't see a squirrel. And later on, I was told it was because that animals run from fires. They're not like people. We run toward it. Animals run away from it. So it was like eerily quiet too, like just you know, no sounds of what you would expect. And so we walked upon this Bible, and it was closed. And again, it was all intact, and it was singed around the edges. And one of the guys again said that the Bible made it, you know, where were, you know, like the remains
the people.
The people. And so I had almost simultaneously asked for the sign, and all of a sudden a wind came in from nowhere, opened up the Bible to Psalm 23, "The Lord is my shepherd." And this big brown hawk took up off, like up into flight off the ground. At that moment, I turned around, the vision was gone, and everything inside me said, "Don't ask again, because the lightning bolt's going to, you know, present itself." And so I took myself for a moment, reflected, put it, like almost I etched it in my mind, and I went back and did my job. Now, anybody that questions the ability to go back to your job doesn't quite understand the level of training that goes with this, or how even some victims of trauma, when they've been hurt in some way, are able to either fight, flight, or fright. It all has to do with that part of your brain, the amygdala, that takes over, that survival mechanism. And so years later, as I began to explore, as I moved out of into the healing process, I've met with many responders, most of whom are from the World Trade Center, who had not the story of a legion of angels, but a moment when they believed they were about to die and something angelic presence appeared and helped them get out of the tower or protected them while they lay under a fire truck as the towers came down. And so actually working on a book about it, it'll take me probably another couple years, but we titled it Tainted Souls While I Grieve, I Hope. And in the middle of their grief of that moment, they called to God and believed that miracles happen. So I'm not the only one that has a story to share about that day. And so I will tell you, as we wrote the book and it was edited, there are no words in the English language that will adequately describe the beauty of that moment. Try as I may, what the light looked like, a white cloud, the whitest cloud can't even come close to the light that surrounded those angelic beings, nor can I adequately describe their beauty. I can see it in my mind, I can feel it in my heart, and my spirit's uplifted every time I talk about it, but I can't adequately describe the beauty and the brilliance of that light.
Wow. It's I gotta stop for 1 second. I'm listening to you, and I hear there's like almost like a sense of peace that comes through when you talk about that. I don't know if you've ever been told that or not. You probably have been, but I'm curious. One of the questions I wrote down while you were talking, why do you think some people can see that and some people can't?
I think we're all gifted. I just don't think we're open to it. I think sometimes, like, you know, I have family members that have a hard time with it because it doesn't equate with their version of, like, what our religious background is. I think people are afraid, you know, just like me and just like you, what you've said, and in my travels, thousands of people that have been at chats and talks that talk about how even if they mentioned it, like as a child, they were told to be quiet. People will think you've lost, you know, any sense of your mind or whatever. And I think it's about fear. And so when the more we talk about it, the more people find comfort because they have relatable stories. You know, I always start by with a show of hands, whether there's 25 or 300 or 400 in a group with a show of hands, how many people believe in the presence of angelic beings? In every group, it averages 95 to 98%. So I have them keep their hands up until everybody else looks around the room. Now look around the room. 95 to 98%. And if you look at the dogma of every major religion in the world, they have at least one winged messenger mentioned within their doctrine. And so I think it's just the biggest thing is fear, maybe fear of your religion. I can't tell you how many times we've sent out the book to speak at a particular, and I've been told, well, you're not talking in the language of a particular religion. And I say to them, it's not about religion. It's the connection to the divine. It's the connection of spirit. It's our humanity. It's our spirituality. And the angels are non-denominational. And that's not me saying that. That's in the dogma of all these religions, all these beliefs. It's angels are non-denominational. So why would it be my place to say, if you're not this, then you can't see them. If you're not, that's not my place. My place is to share my story. How anybody chooses to interpret it is nothing I can control. What I want to leave when I leave from a chat is for people to find comfort, find a direction of healing, and find a direction to feel comfortable with themselves. That, as we said, and your show does the same thing, the best ever you, you know, before you leave this earth, to find that part of you that makes you comfortable and content and makes you understand that you're fulfilling your purpose and your dreams by allowing yourself to be who you were meant to be.
I'm just writing that down too. I'm going to listen to that again too. Good reminders. Can I keep asking you questions about angels just so we learn?
Surely.
And whether you can answer them or not, it's fine. I'm wondering if you, as you've thought about this and gone through this over and over, have you ever figured out why they were there, what their purpose for being there was? Do you know?
During the EMDR sessions, as I said, the first couple months were all about the gory detail.
Yeah.
And then in the fall of 2008, as we moved into it, there was a difference in the even the voice on. And I was told that through the channeling during the EMDR, that the angels were sent to pursue the defeat of violence. And that I put a little excerpt in the book. Let me just pull it up here because I want to read it. And then that Archangel Michael, if those that have had the book and haven't bought it, you'll see that there was an image that I had an artist create. And
I love that.
So,
what page are you on?
Actually, it would be before the first chapter. It's
okay,
after the prologue, the preface. And so you'll see that there's an archangel that laid down his sword and embraced his heart. And what I put there was because it was what we heard as far as the audio tapes. On that day, I saw a vision of an archangel laying down his sword and embracing his heart. I took it to symbolize the metamorphosis of humanity to the higher level of spirituality. The warrior was beckoned to lay down his weapon and move toward the light and love of an open heart. And I think that reflects a lot about our current world. I mean, everybody wants to move in one direction, and I think we need to be more open to our hearts. And believe me, if my mom were on the phone with you and if my dad were alive, I've always had like a warrior mentality. I was the one, if someone hurt my brothers or sisters, I was the first one you know, after them to protect them. And my dad had a saying, he did it lovingly, that I was too stupid to be afraid. I had a nickname of Tiger as a kid, so that you can imagine. I would pounce before I would ask questions.
Yeah.
So the hardest thing for me was that transition, even now at my age, is to not embrace like that warrior. If something negative happens, the first thing I want to do is like jump in front of it and make sure nobody gets hurt. But I think that we have to move toward that open heart and be more loving in our approach to, you know, letting down the guard of the ego and opening up more to the heart of the spirit. I think that that's very important in today's world, as it was on that day. Hatred bred what transpired that day. Everything we see going on in the present world relates to hatred, to not being respectful of another's viewpoint, and having, you know, we've seen a surge of it as of late, and it's people's fear, people's hate, and I believe that that's what the angels said that day, that they were there to pursue the defeat of violence. I think it's very relevant in today's world.
Okay, now this might be, I don't know, it just might not be a good question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. I don't know if it's going to be the most articulate either, so just bear with it and fix it for me. Help me out here. So all the people that perished, all the people that perished right there at the Flight 93 crash.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think angels visit to take care of those people and help them get to heaven and protect them and make sure they're okay? Or are angels for the living? Or how does that all work? Because I'm kind of confused about the role of angels. I'm learning. That's the best way I can explain it. Do they help people go from one place to another? Does that make sense at all?
I think they help the living. Yeah, I think they help the living and the transitioning, because when I ask people to share their stories, and again, I do it at every event, I ask, has anyone ever felt, heard, or saw the presence of an angel? And it's in a multitude of responses, just pretty much like, you know, you see in movies today, bringing more spirituality out into it. I've heard stories about the moment that they were in need, like it was a life-threatening situation, or the moment when they were on the operating table and felt that they had a near-death experience with an angelic being. But I've also had hundreds of comments from people that tell me that the moment that a beloved person was about to die or left, they saw an angelic, or they felt a touch, or they heard a whisper, you know, that related to the angels. So if you look, if you study, and I'm not a theologian, so I want to make that clear, but in studying like the history of the angel, I try to do, if you look at my library, or, you know, my little library, it's probably 75 to 80% that relate about the history of angels and that, or talk with others that work in the field. They're here to guide, protect, heal, and manifest dreams. So they're here to relate to the whole human experience and the connection, you know, of the spirit. And again, if you look historically, we'll just for instance, just take our Catholicism, because that's the way you were taught. Almost every significant event in the Bible, whether it related to the announcement of Jesus coming, the announcement, or when he rose from the dead, the birth, the death. If you look within that, the story structures of the Bible, winged messengers were portrayed significantly, and so it wasn't just at death; it was birth. Mm-hmm. It was incidents of where someone was in dramatic trauma like about to die, and they appear to protect them. So I think it's the same in today's world. And again, I don't say it to be argumentative with anybody's religion or anybody's fears. I base it off of, you know, as a cop and working with the Bureau, we did a lot of research. I set out to research because I needed to know, before I opened my mouth to share, was I the only one that felt like this? Did I? And it's gone on. If you look at, I think, the first depiction, like, of what you would consider artwork, if I recall right, it's a stone slab that dates back, I think it's to 750 A.D., and I believe it hangs in the New York Metropolitan Museum. And it's a piece of art dated back. Did you? Okay,
yep.
Well then. And it dates back, and it's a winged messenger delivering a message to a depiction of a human being. So it's gone a lot longer than, you know. I had a grandmother, my dad's mom, who, if someone, she would smell roses and then see a vision of a person that she knew, and within a day or two, that person would pass. What was that? You know,
Yeah. They're,
you know, and again, all these stories of, and more, whether you follow Facebook or Instagram, more and more you see people sharing stories about what just transpired. And so we can't all be delusional.
I mean, it can't date
back to the first ancestors and the mysticism that surrounded the original religions before we moved into the direction, you know, we have. So if you look at historically and you go to gather the facts and you do research, it comes out in my human mind that we're all gifted. It's just how open, and I think the biggest factor is if you're afraid of it, you know, I think that's the biggest factor.
Yeah. Do you mind if I keep you for just a little bit longer? I know we've gone over the 30 minutes, but we're still in record
mode.
That's fine. Do you have time?
That's okay. No, that's fine.
Okay, so we'll go maybe like 10 more minutes and keep talking a little bit more. I know you've said this a few times, that you encountered angels as a child. So I know one of the questions I wanted to ask you is, prior to this event, had you ever encountered angels? And you also talk in your second book about your grandchildren a little bit more. Do you want to talk about that and talk about, like, kids and angels and people and angels and, you know, all that good stuff?
I'll tell you what,
stuff.
We've done workshops with children with angels, and it's just amazing. Even like, it would take too long to explain the exercises and things, but just the movement of their energy and the connection, like, it just far exceeds what an adult is. Like, when you gauge the movement of the energy and how they connect. But as a child, right before I published the first book, maybe about the year before, my mom came to the house the day after Christmas, and we were having a conversation about the books. And one of the first questions she asked me was, "Is it about the angels at Flight 93?" I said, "Yes." And then she said, "What about the blue man with wings?" And I looked at her, and as soon as she said that, so many things started coming back in my mind, and I got very angry with her and asked her how she knew about the blue man with wings. And she said, when I was a little girl, maybe the age of 3 to 7, I would come down at night. Sometimes they were sleeping, sometimes they were watching, like, Johnny Carson or Benny Hill or one of those late night shows, and I would tell them that the blue man with wings was up in the room. Dad would come up, look under the bed, open up the walk-in closet, and he would tell me no one was there. And I would be insistent that he was in the room smiling. So fast forward to when my daughter and her eldest child came to live with me, when the little one was only 9 months old. a relationship was breaking up, and so she was raised in this. I bought the house I'm in now, so that my daughter could bring the little one home. And so as she grew up and she got a little bit bigger, we went on a trip to South Carolina, and we got a little bit lost, and I said something for her not to be afraid. We would find our way. And she shared with me, after you go a certain distance, you'll see a sign and it'll be okay. You make that turn and we'll be there home. We'll be back to the hotel safely. Now, this kid was 4 or 5 years old, and I said to her, well, how do you know? And she said, well, the blue man's here, and he just told me. And, like, I remember the blue man. I don't remember it quite that young, but I remember him. And she's talking about him, and now my mom's talking about him. And it was almost like in that moment, because my mom was the one that hushed me and told me never to tell anybody that, they would have thought I lost my mind. It was almost like that what we talk about in the Bible about the blessing of the father. My father was dead at that point. And so the blessing of the mother came, and it was almost like something inside of me quieted down, opened up, and said, it's okay to move forward with all of this. Whatever happened is not as significant as that whatever you need to do to fulfill your life in the manner that befits your spirit, then move forward and do it. And so that's how I knew on that day who Archangel Michael was. I had seen him as a child, and I saw him as an adult. And it talks about in the second book, that's why I call it the White Light of Grace. There were moments when I heard whispers of what to do, why I was doing my job. I had no idea who or what it was, but now I understand it was the messages of the angels.
Did your mom ever admit to seeing angels herself?
My mom has not, but the grandchildren and other members of the family have, you know, extended family, and we've shared short stories about when our, you know, my grandmother told me things that I never knew she talked to others. And post the release of the second book, a couple first cousins who's shared the same grandmother shared stories about when they had significant talks with her as well. So again, it's like all the research is being done and everything's starting to fold from my childhood, but also relatives, you know, close relatives, first cousins. And then in the travels, all these other people that have these magnificent stories of the moment that they felt, heard, or saw what they believed to be an angelic being. So, you know, The investigator in me is now satisfied that there's more there than something that's tangible to touch, that there's something greater out there in the universe that's providing us guidance and protection and healing.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. As a person who's nearly lost my life twice from anaphylactic allergic reactions, I don't know if you mm-hmm. probably know what those are. I've almost died twice, and one of them I almost died with being 6 months pregnant after eating a cookie with walnuts. And we stayed in the hospital for a week after that. I thoroughly believe in angels and the presence of, I would say, being you. It's the first time I've really heard it described like that, and so I wrote it down. Like the miracles happen, where that moment where you know you're going to die and miraculously mm-hmm. you don't, when you're calling mm-hmm. to God, going, please don't let me die. I have so much more to do, and I promise if I live, I'll do this, that, or another thing, and, you know, all the things you say. I totally believe that, and believe people who say that, and have been through it.
Well, I will share with you, one of the best books I ever read that calmed me post all of this was written by Ebert, the Proof of Heaven.
Oh, I love that.
Have you read
book.
That yeah. yet?
I have. Yeah. I love that
it
book.
It was written by a neurologist. I mean, he wrote about his experience where he almost died, and Kate believed he was in heaven for the 7 days that he lay there. Ibn Alexander, I tried to say his name and didn't pronounce it, so I apologize to anybody, but it allowed for me, he was a neurosurgeon that talked about, and when I read his book, it helped me to understand how my mind worked that day. So much so, I've never written a letter to another author in my life, and I wrote it to thank him for bringing the analytical, to understand it analytically, what happened that day. And so there's too many people out there now that from every walk of life, from an everyday, mom that's home with the kids to a neurosurgeon who had this amazing experience, that there's too many facts at this point to negate it and poo-poo it off that it's not significant in our culture now.
Yeah, I'm not one to write letters to other authors either, and I think about you a lot like that. I'm like, I'm so glad I've met you. You give me courage, girl.
me too. I mean, you've given me the ability. You've given me a great gift too. I appreciate this opportunity and to share, like I said, with you and your audience. It's just, we find grace every day, and I think the most important thing is to be grateful for it. And I'm grateful for you and for you having initiated the contact. And I know that it's not going to be the last time. It's only the beginning of where the fellowship will move. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much too. It's wonderful for you to be here, and I'm gonna wind us down a little bit. But I don't want to go without you mentioning your literary event, because not only are you an author and former FBI agent, all these neat things about you, but you do some amazing work for other authors. Do you want to talk about what you've got coming up and what that all is and how it got started?
Well, it got started because I had knowledge, skills, and abilities from, the public affairs piece of being an employee for the Bureau, and my background as being a training instructor. And I saw, as I moved around through the country, many authors would approach me, and I'm sure that's the same with you, especially when they know you hear you were a Hay House author, they come up and ask you about their experience. And you listen to their stories and think, oh my God, that would be so wonderful for somebody else to know. But they hit a brick wall because they don't know how to move through the process, or maybe, don't know somebody that could help them market, or like you, you struggle to market every, we all do.
Yeah.
So I prayed one day to help take the knowledge, skills, and abilities that I learned from public relations and, to transfer it into something, because I missed serving. I still miss serving. I'll miss it to the day I die. And so what I came up with is to create events, literary events, that allowed other authors to showcase their work. And so we had 2015 and 2016. This year will be bigger. It's called Passages in Prose, and it's held, I can't take credit for it. All I do well is pick great community collaborators and sponsors, and so this will be our third year, and we are hoping to have about 75 authors this year. And last year we brought on WQED, it's the local PBS station, and they brought the young people into it. So we have young writers.
Oh, cool.
That write their stories too, and we have mentoring of the adult writers with the young writers. So I feel like once again I'm serving. Okay, it's not law enforcement, but it fulfills me to be able to help other people, and that was a piece of the puzzle that was missing. So to help others bring their literary works forward. And we're not really focused on whether they're self-published. We have self-published authors, we have indie authors, and we have traditionally published authors. We look for, like, the, you know, the stories, and actually they come forward, kind of like how you manifested. You came forward, you know, like the connection. So the connections just are ongoing, like how it is. So to me, that's how you know when you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, because there's no struggle with it. And so to be able to show others beautiful works is a way of giving back for the gifts I've received. You know, having been gifted with Hay House wanting to publish the books is not something everybody gets. So I want to be able to do something for those that and help them fulfill their dreams. I think it's important. So if that's the direction we've gone professionally, and it brings me great joy to see the first time they hold up their book in front of like a group. It's just,
that's cool, isn't
it's
it?
Just amazing to watch. It is. The smile on their face is no different than Christmas up for a kid, you know?
Yeah. I'm on this journey, I think, of helping kids and teens find their voice to be able to write. And not so much about like all the punctuation that goes with it. I think people stop and think they're not good writers because they don't know how to punctuate. And where it came from was helping my own three children, who will all three be in college in the fall at once.
Wow.
Yeah. I know. I hear that.
God bless.
I hear you. Anybody has a job for me or any money you want to give or donate? Yeah, no. Anyway. So, but where it came, isn't that funny? Yeah. So where helping people find their voice came from, aside from the laughter there, is when they went in to write their college applications, all of them, the colleges they were applying for asked them to write essays. And they were stuck. They're like, well, you know, I've written tons of papers. I can cite this and cite that and do all this stuff. But what do I do for this? And I'm like, you got to write like you're talking. You got to tell somebody what you want or what you're good at or what you know, what your goals are, dreams are. And I love that. And when people find their voice and can pen it, it's cool.
Well, I think it helps them heal too. Regardless, you know, it doesn't matter like what the what's going on inside. I think the writing of it, just like, you know, the psychologist had said to me to read 3 pages every day of a book that allows you to dream. Not a self-help and not like religious, but something that allows your mind to go somewhere away from the trauma. And then she said to write 3 pages every day. And if you look at like books like The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron, that's one of the things she tells you for writer's block to do. So we're going to have a conversation, because I think, you know, when we hang up, we can talk about other things, you know, schedule. But I think I can lead you in the direction, too, with some resources that are out there in multimedia.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to leave with, you know, I really appreciate it. And thank you so much for being with me today.
Oh, no, thank you. It was great. It was like sitting across the table from you and just chatting, so thank you.
Yeah.
You made
it
easy.
I get frustrated a lot because I can't get to the people I want to meet. So I use the radio, and I'm like, oh, I wish I could just get in a car or hop on a plane and get there. And so this is beautiful, I'll see you probably in October. But I just love you, and thank you very much. And I'm so proud of you for your books. And kiss all the grandchildren and your daughter and
your
everybody.
Your children, and blessings with those. With those three at once. That's going to be
funny.
Amazing, huh?
Yeah.
That'll be a story in itself, huh?
I think people follow me on Twitter just to laugh at me about that.
Well,
one of them got
I'm laughing out of joy. I mean, just imagine
what
an accomplishment, you know? It's pretty cool. So I'll email you some dates, and we'll get back on the, you know,
on the phone.
And and we'll chat. But thank you so much for the opportunity. And to help me to plug my works and what I do. Thank you so much. Take care.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much for being here. And everybody, thank you for listening to us. We really, really appreciate Lily being with us today. It's so cool to have her on. I've been waiting patiently for this day to arrive. And I just want to remind you before we go about her books. They are available wherever books are sold. She's a Hay House author. The first book is In the Shadow of a Badge. The second book is The White Light of Grace. And then she also has a literary event called Passages in Prose. I'll put links up that go with the show to all of her books. I also always follow up each show with a blog on besteveryou.com. So it'll give you her bio, her books, her links, images, you know, all that good stuff all in one spot. So you have Lily all in one spot. And then her website is lilyleonardi.com. It's LILLIELEONARDI.com. And so we really appreciate her being with us today. And just thank you all so much for listening. And look for your angels. They're there. I just love that. So I'm so glad we're talking about angels. I just love my angels. So on Friday, we're going to have a show. We usually do our shows on Thursday, but our guest is going to come on Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. Her name is Sherianna Boyle, and you'll love her work as well. She's the author of several books. If you suffer from any kind of anxiety or depression, she talks about the four gifts of anxiety. Usually people put anxiety in a negative light, and she shows you how to work really positively with it. So I'm looking forward to talking with her about that. And then she also has another book, a newer one out called Mantras Made Easy, and I'm really enjoying reading that book too. So I wish you all a lot of love. Thank you so much for listening, and you can visit us at besteveryou.com for more information, or tweet me at besteveryou, and I am there, and I'll get back to you right away. So thank you, everybody. Enjoy your day. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Best Ever You Network. For more information, just visit us at besteveryou.com.